the golf I grew up and knew actually was when I worked at Keaton. It was a mix of people from whether you had money, you didn't have money. That's why I love Muni courses, because it is the true representation of the people in golf, the diversity and people from all over. They're terrible, they're good. It sparked this underground community that was there that wanted to disrupt the game and play it their way, not the way that the system tells you to play it.
What's up, y'all? Kendra here with another edition of Golf Homies. Today on the podcast, we have my homie, John Lumpkin. I had the pleasure of meeting John during my brief stint with Nike Golf. This is a podcast I've been wanting to do for basically 2 years now, and finally had the opportunity to sit down with John and have a conversation. John is one of the funniest, most passionate, most sincere people I've ever had the privilege to meet. He took me under his wing at Nike, and for that, I'll be forever grateful. He's someone that I really respect and someone who has experienced just about every aspect of the game of golf that one could experience. So with that being said, I'll hand it over to John and I, where we kick it off learning about how he first got introduced to golf. Sitting here with my homie Lump, who I met a couple years ago at a certain sportswear company based in Portland. I, just having worked with you like in the golf space and the golf industry, got to kind of see firsthand like your passion and your drive within golf and like wanting to change it for the better. But I'm curious about kind of your when did golf enter your life and what is that origin story for you?
Yeah, it's actually a pretty funny story. I think I was in middle school. Never played golf. There's a country club, Lakewood Country Club. I grew up in Dallas, Texas. Like, you know, my dad worked for like the city transit. And they had like, it's like when people used to do like corporate barbecues, and it was like at this like weird ranch, and they had like a driving range. And I was like, okay, let me hit around. Like, never done this. They had this, like, I just hit balls for like an hour, got a blister on my hand, no clue what I was doing. And they had like a closest to the pin competition, and like everyone at this thing was there, and you get like two swings, and like the first swing I like completely whiff the ball in front of everybody, and this is just like me like being competitive, like, yeah, I'll sign up, no big deal, it's like super easy. Second swing, I'm not making this up, I swing, the club goes flying out of my hands, goes backwards 50 yards in the air. Everyone's just like, oh my god, the club went further than the ball. I was like so embarrassed, like my soul left my body, you know, I'm just this kid. And then after that, I was kind of like, okay, what is this? And then like every year, like my dad's company would have like, you know, like a little, they'd have like a little golf scramble, and I'd play like once a year. And it wasn't until like I was probably 16, I needed a job. And that summer I'd played golf a couple times. I'd only played 18 holes like maybe two or three times. And I was like, I'm gonna go get a job at this golf course like down the street from my house. And then that was like, that's when everything really changed. That golf course is Keaton Park, by the way, which I don't know if people follow Keaton on Instagram. They've done an amazing job to kind of really tailor the facility to the younger crowd in Dallas and just make a really cool experience. It makes me like very proud that like I get to call that my home course. And that was it. Like, I remember like the first week I went to the golf course like 4 days in a row to get a job. Mickey Pearsall, it's like a great golf pro name. He was the pro. And finally he's like, all right, damn kid. Like, yeah, you're hired. And like started picking the range, and then like someone gave me a lesson there, and like once I hit the ball in the air for the first time, that was it. It was off to the races. Like, I was there every day.
So, okay, also you're a lefty, walk me through that. Did you start like out straight like that first day when you're at the driving range at that KP, or also do they call it KP anywhere else but Oregon, closest to the pin?
I still don't know how to explain to people when someone's like, what is why do they call it KP? I'm like, I don't know, man, they call it KP, and that's just what it is. All right, so it's like people in Portland standing in line to order drinks at the bar when, like, you know, you can just walk up to the bar like any other bar in America and just order a drink. But that's another topic for another day. Yeah, like, I remember my dad took me to like a flea market, and it was like, I think it was like $50 for a set of left-handed clubs, because like nobody buys left-handed clubs. And yeah, they randomly had like a left-handed club when I did that thing. I must have been like the only left-handed club there. Yeah, I tell you what, lefties have, there's a lot more for lefties now than when I was starting out. There wasn't a lot of options and all the cool things. Like you couldn't get like any of the cool clubs. Like it was really annoying. But I would say now it's a lot yeah, better. But yeah, like I think my first set was like this $50 like flea market set. And then of course that's when like when I started working at the course, like at Keaton Park, that's when I became interested in like product and the gear. And I was like, so I think my first real set was like a set of Ping i3 irons, just because the pro Mickey was like a Ping staffer. And it's actually a really cool story. The reason he went with Ping was like, you know, Keaton Park is in South Dallas. Like a lot of people, you know, at that time people weren't going out there to play because it's, you know, it's kind of in the hood, like nobody wants to go. And he had just moved from like West Texas. You know, the way the Dallas public courses work, it's actually really cool. The pro owns everything, and then the city gets the green fees. Like a lot of those golf pro jobs don't really exist anymore. It's the best job in the world because you report to no one, you own your own business, and you know the city gets a small cut of everything, and then they get the green fees and they do all the maintenance and everything. And the Ping rep was the only rep that came to introduce himself when he like moved there, and so that's why he's always been like very loyal to Ping. So it's like a really, really cool story. But yeah, I had my first set of like real left-handed clubs was like some Ping i3 irons.
I remember the Ping i3 irons. I definitely had a set of Ping i3s. So you're at the golf course working when I guess you're in high school, end of high school. You went to Mississippi State. Once you got past high school and working at the golf course, like how did golf kind of follow you like into your college years?
So I went to like a Jesuit high school, like an all boys Jesuit, same high school Jordan Spieth went to actually. I'm just way older than Jordan. And it was like my junior year and everyone's starting like the college process. And I was like, I had no clue what I wanted to do. Like school wasn't like I wasn't the strongest academically, not because I'm not smart. It was just like had ADD at the time. Wasn't quite, you know, didn't really know that, like, you know, staying focused, like not, you know me, like it's not my strong suit. My mind is like all over the place. So school was like never, I wasn't like the best student. I was like a B student, but like never like a, you know, I'm going to Harvard or I'm going to go to Ivy League. And so I really had no clue what I wanted to do. And Mickey Pearsall, the pro that I worked for, was like, hey, you know, they have this program, the PGA of America does, where you can like go learn about running Keaton or doing what I do. And I was like, okay, tell me more. I mean, as soon as I started researching like the PGM programs, I got like super stoked. And that like it took me no time to start basically applying. So I applied to like Arizona State, New Mexico State, and Mississippi State. And I narrowed it down to like New Mexico State and Mississippi State. But by the time I got to like senior year, like it was funny. I was like one of the only people in my class, and this isn't like a brag, that like I had a clear vision of like, I'm going to go do this. And this is what I want to do. And I remember our counselor always saying that. You're like the only one that's like, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to go do it. I'd like to think that's still like my mentality with a lot of stuff. Yeah. So I went and visited New Mexico State, some of the best Mexican food I've ever had in my entire life in Las Cruces. But the campus was just like, nah. And then when I went to Mississippi State, I was like, oh, I got SEC football. Like, you know, my dad's from Memphis. It's like 2 hours from Memphis. A lot of my family has been rooted in Mississippi since like 1830, not by choice. So like I have a lot of rich family history in North Mississippi. So it just felt like, you know, it was like the right thing to do. So yeah, I went to Mississippi State to go do the PGA PGM program.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but after school, what was your first destination? Was it Sun River, or there a couple more stops in between? So you're going through school and you know what you're doing, you know what you want to do. What's the journey from when you finish school, for the first couple years after that?
So the way the PGM program works is that you do a series of internships while you're there. You do three. So you do, after your freshman year, you do a 3 month. Then you come back, you do your sophomore year. The sophomore year, you do a summer fall 6 month internship, and then you come back, you do like a spring semester, summer semester, fall semester, and then you do a spring summer internship 6 months, and then you graduate in the fall. So it's like a 4.5 year program. So my first internship was at TPC Craig Ranch. It was actually the first summer they opened. The GM there was a super cool guy, Bill Hughes. Like I still remember him. Then the next internship was actually at Crosswater, so in Sun River. So that's how I got introduced to Sun River. The number two guy at Sun River Resort, he was at Crosswater. He was the head pro at Crosswater at the time. He is a Mississippi State PGM alumni who went out there and then like never moved back. Josh Willis, like he's like a big brother. So did that for 6 months. And then my last internship was at TPC Southwind in Memphis. So I think it was what was really good about the Mississippi State experience was that I knew what I was getting into when I went to the PGM program. It's crazy to see, like, each year, you know, you start with like 60 kids. After the first internship, it like cuts in half. And then after the second internship, it cuts in half again. By the time I got out of Mississippi State, I was the only one in the class to graduate on time. There are still friends that graduated, and a couple kids transferred in that graduated with me. But I was the only one in my original class to like graduate on time. And I'm not trying to like brag. So anyway, it's like, basically I graduate and it's kind of like, oh, what do I do? You know, it was 2008. It was a terrible time to try and find a job in the golf industry, especially at a private club, which is what I wanted to do. And so I moved back home to Dallas, and I'd gotten a job offer to come back to Crosswater, and I turned it down. This is just what's so cool. Like, Mickey was basically like, hey, I know you want to work at a private club. One of the leaders in the PGA office there was basically helping connect me to like all the private clubs there, which was kind of cool. Like, I got an interview like Dallas Country Club or Preston Trails, like these clubs I never thought I could ever work at. But it was just bad timing. And he goes, look, I'll hire you right now. I'm busy. He had moved to one of the other Dallas public courses. So obviously you can imagine like an economic downturn. Like, they were doing like 350 rounds a day. Cause it's just like, you know, it's $30 for the cart to go play 18 holes. So they were so busy. And he's like, I'll hire you. If you find a job at a private club that you want, you can do it. But in the meantime, I can use you here. And I ended up working for him for a year. And then after about a year, I just kind of just remember like I had such a cool experience in Oregon and Sun River that I was like, yo, I gotta get back. And I just called up the guy that I know there, and he's like, yeah, you want to come back and work this spring? I was like, okay. And it was literally that's how it went. And I've been in Oregon since 2010, and that's how I came back and spent 3 years in Bend, and obviously now in Portland.
Sun River is probably my favorite place on earth. If I could only go on one more vacation, it literally might be to Sun River. I've been going there since I was a kid, and golf obviously is a cornerstone of Sun River as well, with three really good tracks.
And so after Sun River, I moved to Portland. I went to Portland Golf Club, and I remember it was just kind of run not the way that we ran. Like, we ran a tight ship in Sun River, and I was very proud of that. Like, worked very hard but provided a good experience. And I remember like a member would come in, and like somebody on the staff would like get kind of freaked out, like, oh, this member's mad. I'm like, man, hold my beer. Like after working the front desk at a resort, I was like, oh, Mrs. Johnson, they did what? Oh, I can't believe they did that. You know what, Let's get this right for it. You know, just like, it was so easy. And I just couldn't believe how like frustrated and annoyed people would get. I was like, guys, this is like our job. It's like the easiest thing in the world to like make this person happy. Again, it's like one of those experiences. Like, did I want to work at the front desk? No. But it also helped, like, at the time I didn't know, like, setting me up for like what I'd be doing in the future and stuff. So very thankful for those things, and like very humbling at the same time as well.
That's incredible. I mean, this is so cool to hear, because this is all like, when we were working together, it's not like we had like, you know, time to just like tell each other's life stories. So it's like, it's really interesting to hear all of these different steps you took along the way that eventually led you to where you're at today. Curious, other golf courses in Central Oregon that when you lived there, that you played, did you play like Lost Tracks? Did you play Old Back Nine, Widgie Creek, all of those? Like, what were like kind of some of your favorites when you were over there, other than like Crosswater, Sun River?
Yeah, I'd say like when we weren't playing Crosswater, Widgie was one of our favorites. Just, I think that back nine is like, this is like, it's just fun. Like, this is like a lot of fun holes. I always recommend Widgie. And the other was Bend Country Club, now Bend Golf Club. And what's funny is my roommate and like my teammate, Eric Mateel, that I worked with at Crosswater all 3 years, he stayed after I moved to Portland and worked at the resort for like another 2 or 3 years. He's now like the kind of like assistant GM at Bend Golf Club. And then our other roommate is a member out there now. And so that's where I just got my first ace this summer. So that Bend Golf Club is just like, it's always so pure. And it's just like, it's not a country, it's just like a super chill membership, super chill vibe. The greens are some of the best greens in Oregon. That course was just always so pure. And like, I even went out, when I went out there this summer, I mean, it was like the fairways were just so tight. The greens roll like a 12. It was awesome. So that was like our other favorite place to play. Cause again, they just had like, unlike the other places, they just had like unique fun holes to, you know, just like a lot of character to the course and a lot of different shots you could hit. It was the coolest job. I've had a lot of cool jobs in golf, but it was definitely the coolest because we had like, again, great members. I had great teammates I worked with, and you're just in a beautiful place like Bend. It was super cool. But yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. A lot of my childhood golf memories involve Central Oregon, because we'd go over there as a family and we would play Widgie, and we would play Woodlands. We'd play Meadows, Crosswater once in a while. Yeah. Woodlands is goated for sure. Kind of moving forward with golf in your life. It is really interesting because you really have had golf in your life, in your personal life and work life, in all different levels. You've worked in literally washing dishes at a golf course, trying to become a head pro, working working for a major sportswear brand at the brand level involved with golf. And that to me is like a pretty incredible journey in of itself, just seeing like the different steps that you've taken within golf. So you moved to Portland, and it seems like you were presented an opportunity to go work elsewhere. Kind of like from that point, from when you moved to Portland until present day, like how has golf come in and out of your life? Has it always remained present from a work standpoint, and from like just like how often do you play, like in terms of that as well?
I'd say like looking back at my time when I moved to Portland, so I moved to Portland to move in with someone I was dating at the time, and then they dumped me 6 months later and moved to London. And I was just here. So, and then I was like, all right, well, I'm not going anywhere else, so I'm just going to stay here. It was like this like weird, yeah, like I'd been very lucky. I'd done every job. Like I've mowed greens. I've done, you know, I've worked at a resort, a public course, private course, worked a tour event, you know, like all these cool experiences. And when I got to Portland Golf Club, and this is not a knock at Portland Golf Club, I'm just going to keep it real and be transparent. Like I'm sitting here like, oh my God, the history, like, you know, Ben Hogan and the Ryder Cup here. It was like this, like I wasn't feeling fulfilled. This is supposed to be this prestigious club and private club. And I just was like, this is everything that I've been wanting to do. And I get there and I'm doing it. And I'm kind of like, yeah, this isn't what I thought I was going to do. I just like, I was feeling empty. One of the things I learned in the PGM program, and you know, maybe not everyone believes it, but like at the time when I was, I have my AM status back now, but like I was a PGA professional. Always people are like, oh, so did you play on the PGA tour? Well, no, technically me and Tiger are members of the same organization. We're just different classifications. I'm A8. Assistant golf professional. He's A3 PGA Tour player. No one cares about that explanation. So it's like anytime you say you're a PGA professional, like, oh, did you play the PGA Tour? Nope. I was actually a terrible player at the time. I wasn't a good player. I loved the business side of it. I loved the product side of it. And I really started to notice that at Portland Golf Club that I really got obsessed with like, okay, what's the new polo line coming out for Nike or Peter Millar or whatever you want to say. And I really started getting into that, you know, the last few years when I was working on the green grass side, but I wasn't just like, I wasn't feeling fulfilled. And like, one of the things they teach you was like, hey, your job is to grow and promote the game of golf. And I just feel like I wasn't getting to do that. Like, I really believe that. My mission is to make golf better and to like grow it. And I'm not getting to do that. And I'll never forget this. So, all right, disclaimer, this is views of represent myself and not that of my employer, which is Nike. One of the members he had just joined was Bob Wood. And I don't know if anyone knows who Bob Wood is. He was the first president of Nike Golf, and he was the first product line manager for Nike Golf in 1984. I don't know if everyone knows the first Nike Golf athlete was Seve Ballesteros. And he's an amazing storyteller, and he says with everything he does. He told me a story that like when he retired, Tiger wrote a pin flag to him that just said, hey, Bob, you. And he's just the coolest guy. The coolest guy. And I was like, this is the time I was like, I think I want to start working at Nike, like Nike Golf. I'm right here. You know, I was so interested in the product from clubs to footwear and apparel. I just found myself being fascinated by that stuff. And I just was like, hey, Mr. Wood. He's like, okay, dude, call me Bob. He's like, I was like, hey, can I just get some, can we get coffee? And I pick your brain about Nike Golf. And he just goes, yeah. And I was like, this guy's like a rock star, right? Like this guy helped build Nike Golf. And that set off this flame of like, I want to be somewhere where it's bigger and you're making a bigger impact. And that's when things really started to kind of change in my perception of like what I could actually, you know, I could actually achieve this goal I have of like, you know, making the game better, growing the game and doing it in the right way, but doing it through the other side. You know, I'd been so much on the front lines on the consumer side. I was just continuing to just be fascinated with the business and like the brands that work with it and the products that, how do I influence the product design and all of this stuff? And like little did I know what I'd be able to do at that time and what I was thinking. I'd say this is probably the first time I've actually reflected back on it, which is kind of weird. But that, like that conversation and being there and being in Portland, where there's obviously a lot of culture around the company here, like was really cool.
So kind of talking about being able to impact the game and make changes and kind of break down those barriers for people, what were your interpretations of what those barriers were and kind of had a zoomed out view of it? Were they the same barriers you thought they were, or did you learn that they were different?
Yeah, that's a good question. So my first job on that side was actually working on with the social team. I actually was at a creative agency first for a year working on Nike Golf stuff. But I was doing a lot. I was doing all the like social listening and responding. So this was like me like literally getting to do what I wanted to do. Like I'm actually getting to talk to golfers through the voice of Nike Golf on social. But it was there that you start to really listen. And we know the comments in social. This is before they were as toxic as they are now. But I think you really started to get this perception of what golf was really like. like and like what was happening. And I think what was cool for me was that I was at a brand with a team that really wanted to just, golf is an elitist rich white sport, and we want to just break, we just want to tear the whole system down and like just completely revolutionize and like change the way we connect people to the game of golf. And like, you have amazing athletes that are cool, but yeah, like you could see it, like you could see what golf was. And like I'd felt it where like different places I've worked, and it, you know, I didn't understand it at the time. And I think getting to go on the brand side and on a bigger scale, like could really zoom out and kind of see this perception of like what was like really happening in golf. And like I didn't love it, and that kind of became like my mission to just like, let's, you gotta blow the system up. And like, if we want this game to survive and be, I don't want to say like make it cool, because we all thought it was cool. It wasn't about making it cool. It was like, golf is cool. That's why we play it. We just want to show everyone that it is cool, and that like you don't have to be like a country club member, or this, you don't have to tuck your polo in every single time, even though I do. I like my polo tuck. I'm not always wearing Jordans on the golf course. Like, that's just my taste. But I think that's just to show that there is this. The golf I grew up and knew actually was when I worked at Keaton. It was a mix of people from, whether you had money, you didn't have money. Like, that's why I love Muni courses, because it is the true representation of like the people in golf, and like the diversity and people from all over. They're terrible, they're good. And it was like working at a brand like Nike Golf, you were taking kind of that mentality and trying to spread that around, right? Where everyone just assumes golf is this like elite competition and elite country club. But it's really like a lot of the golf is played in the streets at these mini courses. And that's like, that just became kind of my mission of like, you know, how do I take that energy of what I grew up around and what I learned and can help a big brand like Nike connect to people in that way?
What were some things that like you felt like you really had an impact, or even just in the last few years, like what have you noticed about golf that has changed? Like, is it more inclusive? Is it more, are some of those barriers broken down?
When I went to the brand side, I think I had it, and it was like this ability to just unleash. I just wanted to disrupt things in golf. I just really wanted to just, I'm the kind of the person that like, yes, I like process, but also just like, I'll create a process, do something, and then I pick it apart and try to make it better and do it another way. It's one of my Gallup strengths. I just learned about that. Being at a big brand like Nike, I got to do that, right? And we got to disrupt things. I'll never forget, like, it was like 2015, we did the Nike Golf Club campaign. And I don't know if you remember, it was one of our, we kind of did this like cool photo shoot with like a lot of the athletes that we had, where they had like tech pack on and they had hat backwards. And like, that was the lead photo. It was like one of the athletes hitting a shot with his hat backwards. Who would ever thought that like an Instagram post with a golfer with his hat backwards would just, I think it sparked a revolution. Maybe I'm being biased, but the beginning of the manifesto said, this is not the country club. Right. This is the Nike Golf Club. And it was really like us trying to create this space that invites everyone, right, to come play the game and play the game and how you want to play it. And so, and I remember like the comments, this is offensive and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, good. You know, like that's when you know, like, we've done something pretty cool here. I selfishly want to think that sparked a lot of what we see in golf today. I'm not saying it did. This is just me selfishly saying it, but like the Malbons, so. What you guys are doing, the Hafers, like all these people, right? Like it sparked this underground community that was there that like wanted to like disrupt the game and play it their way and not the way that the system like tells you to play it.
Yeah.
And then you, who would ever, you know, obviously like you still had momentum with Tiger going on at the time. You start to ask yourself like, okay, well, what happens to golf when Tiger's not playing? And we learned that, right? Like we saw what happened. Who would have ever thought that a global pandemic would change the landscape of a sport forever? No one saw that coming. No one was prepared for it. I'll never forget, like, when the pandemic happened, I play at Heron Lakes Golf Course here. Shout out to the Heron Lakes Men's Club. Shout out to the Heron Lakes Degenerates. That's what we call ourselves as a group. So if you guys are listening, this one's for you. It's a lot of people you grew up with, the Phil Bagdads, the Duke Meniers, very competitive. Literally, like, somebody will shoot 7-under on a Saturday and then, but still drink like 7 beers while they do it too. So no one cares, you know, but it's great. But it's like super competitive, but fun. Portland public courses were struggling financially, on the verge of bankrupt, like with the game. You have the pandemic hit, and in like 2 months, Heron Lakes hit their entire revenue for the year. And all these people that used to kind of make fun of golf are like, hey man, I went to the golf course last. I went to the range. It was pretty cool. It was pretty fun. You know, I mean, I don't know why I didn't like it at first. It was like really cool. It was like, yeah, bro, I've been trying to tell you it's cool. trying to tell you it's fun. We've been trying to do all these things to invite you in and do it. And then you have this thing like a pandemic that just puts that on steroids. And I think golf is in, I mean, what a cool time for the sport where you have, I think right now, like all those things that we've ever wanted to accomplish in golf are happening. It's become more diverse. It's just an open, safe space. It was a safe space for people to go during the pandemic, and it's become a safe space for everyone in their life now and like what they want to do.
So to shift and end things, I want to hear what golf looks like for you these days. And I know progressed in your Nike tenure beyond golf. So I'm kind of curious like what golf looks like for you in your personal life and how often you play, where do you play, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Actually, it's been like fun to have this conversation because I've never really, it's probably the first time I've reflected on a lot of these things. But when I was a golf pro, when I was working at Nike Golf, I loved golf. But like when I would play, I didn't love it. It was a job. Right? When you play with members, you felt like it was a job. So you felt like you had to play well. I wasn't a good player back then. Now I have a whole different role at Nike that's not attached to the game. I can be a golfer. I can just go out and I love it so much more now than when I first started playing. I've become a decent player. Still working on the little, got rid of my wedge yips. By the way, shout out to anybody that's got the wedge yips. I had them for 8 years. It was a terrible mental experience. But I've been holding some pitch shots now. My wedge game's a little good. It's pretty good now. It's not great, but it's a lot better than it used to be. And so now it's like I found a good group that I play with. Like I said, I played at Heron Lakes Golf Club. I played in the men's club out there. A lot of good players, so it's like super fun, have a good time, uber competitive. And it's just been so fun to play around like the guys that that you grew up with and you know how their game is, like to be able to like absorb that and be around them and like play in tournaments with them and compete with them. Like it's been so like rejuvenating for my passion for the sport of like wanting to practice more, wanting to get out playing every Saturday morning early. I'm just a golfer now. And so I love the game more than I ever did. If I get a pair of Nike golf shoes, before I was like, well, I need to wear these because I work there. Now it's like, no, I'm going to rock these. This is what I want to, like I can obsess gear and product and all this stuff as a consumer and a fan of the game rather than just doing it because I kind of had to do it because it was my job and I did it. So it's been it's been really refreshing. I'd say the last, I guess, 2-3 years where I can just go out and play and taking golf trips. I just booked a Pinehurst trip. Everybody's been hyping it up. I talked about it with a friend and then I got the damn Instagram ad 2 days later. I was like, all right, got me. At least I got an ad for something I kind of want to do. Thank you, stupid social. But yeah, it's just been so awesome to just go out and play. And I've had some of my best rounds. I finally got a hole in one. Yeah, it's just been like letting go of this pressure of like feeling you have to do these things well in the industry because you work in the industry and just being able to go out and play. I've had some of my best moments in golf since then. And so now I can just be a fan of like what you guys do and a fan of what everyone's doing and just watch and enjoy.
Our Lion Loft headquarters are in Raleigh, not too far from Pinehurst. So we'll have to get you, outfitted with a hat or something to rock at Pinehurst. One last question. If you could have any golf course map as a print, like what's the golf course that you would want?
This is probably like a cheesy answer, but you think I would want to say like a Crosswater or something. It's Keaton Park. And like, that's where I grew up. When I go home, it's the first place I bring my clubs and I go down there and I hit the range. It's just the course I knew. It's the course I love. I think if I could do anything, it would just be my home course where I grew up. It's a special place. And like, it'd be cool to explain that. People might not get it. Like, oh, Keaton? Like, yeah. Yeah. Keaton Park in South Dallas, Pleasant Grove. 100% have to represent the 214 and do that.
All right. Well, I'll have to talk with the design team, see if we can get one worked up for you. John, thanks for... It's weird calling you John. Lumpkin. I don't think I've ever called you John. Thank you for coming on here and kind of sharing your golf story. I've known you for a while and I've learned a whole hell of a lot more about you than I knew before coming into this. So thank you for opening up and sharing your golf story. And we're going to have to get out and play. Maybe drag along Duke Muneer and Baghdad.
I want to, for the record, we played one round at the Reserve. Now, granted, you hadn't played in like 6 months, I think, or something like that. You were coming off an injury. I can't remember what it was, but I did beat you. I want you to know that I did beat you. So we can play again. Bring your wallet. Got to play for something. We'll put coffee or something on the line. Maybe a nice, Portland is now the number one food city in America. We could do a dinner reservation somewhere. So I'll let you come and try to regain the title but I just want to put it on the record that I did beat you.
And here I thought I was going to get through this whole podcast without you mentioning that, but you had to save it for the last bit. But no, that sounds good. Thank you so much again. And yeah, we'll get out and play, and hopefully I can take you down and you can treat me to some Ken's artisan pizza.
Thanks for having me, and you got yourself a deal.
That's going to do it for this edition of Golf Homies. I certainly hope you all enjoyed that conversation. If you're ever in the Portland area, as I always say, please get in touch. If Portland isn't on your radar, you can always get in touch digitally on Instagram or Twitter. Until next time, I hope you all have a wonderful holiday period, and you'll be hearing from me soon.